have. How do you think this can be dealt with?
Yeah, I think one key thing is that we need military authorities to really keep an eye on the types of people coming into the service and the things that they are doing in the service. And we need sort of general thoughtfulness and vigilance on this.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. Again, A.C. Thompson, correspondent for Frontline PBS, reporter for ProPublica. His investigation, Documenting Hate, New American Nazis, premieres tonight, Tuesday night, on PBS stations online at pbs.org/frontline. That does it for our broadcast, Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wells, Tommy Warnoff, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from the Jupiter Hotel, a mid-century Portland Motor Inn turned hotel, located at 800 East Burnside Street, less than 1 mile from downtown Portland. Now open, the Jupiter Next, an elevated hotel expansion. Booking and more information online at jupiterhotel.com.
KBOO is excited to be part of the 2018 Willamette Week Give Guide. This year, Willamette Week and KBOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. KBOO has been showing up for over 50 years. Give to KBOO today and you get full access to the Chinook Book app, plus freebies from Laughing Planet, Gluten Free Gem, Wii Press, and Nosa Familia Coffee. You can contribute right now at kboo.fm/give or call 503-231-8032. Support KBOO, where music makes the movement.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Boom slows down. Excuse me. Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, city parking changes, Portland population boom slows down, and in international news, Easter Island begs for a famous statue. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, November 20th, 2018. I'm Rachel Hartley. The Portland Bureau of Transportation has announced that the city's e-scooter probation period will end as of today. As of tomorrow morning, scooter belongings to the three companies Lime, Skip, and Bird will no longer be available for rent. It is expected that the scooters will be gone from Portland in about a week, and Bureau of Transportation spokesperson Dylan Rivera has asked that anyone seeing an e-scooter on public right-of-way is encouraged to report it to the company of which it belongs. The e-scooter, however, may not be gone for good. Riviera has said that PBOT plans to release findings from the pilot program early next year and from there to seek public input. City Commissioner Chloe Iduli is the overseer of PBOT and is expected to take a hands-on approach to the future fate of the scooters. Riviera stated that the major complaint about the scooters during the pilot program has been people riding on the sidewalk and said that scooters need to be more respectful when riding. An example, staying off the sidewalk and not riding through public parks. A mural at North Carolina's Duke University dedicated to the memory of the 11 people massacred at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh has been vandalized with a swastika. Duke President Vincent Price said in a letter, and quote, that such a craven and cowardly act of vandalism, a desecration of memorial to individuals who were killed because they were Jewish and practicing their faith, should happen anywhere is extremely distressing, he said. And quote, that it should occur in such a visible public location at Duke should be a matter of grave concern to all of us. The mural was located on what is known as Free Speech Bridge on the university's campus, where students have often painted murals that threw light on current topics. This is not the first act of vandalism against a mural on the bridge. Last September, a mural celebrating Latinx Heritage Month was covered with black graffiti in less than 24 hours. Price said that the school is taking steps to ensure the safety of the Jewish community by providing security guards at the campus Jewish Center and installing security cameras near the bridge. And now, it's time for Black History 365.
Black history is happening every day. It's time to start thinking of it outside of a day or a week or a month. We hope to inspire you by enlightening you with those people and events that should be learned from and forever remembered.
Today is November 17th. On this day in 1980, WHMM-TV in Washington, D.C. became the first African-American broadcast television station. The station, which is currently designated as WHUT-TV, is a public broadcasting service member and is owned and operated by Howard University. Since its founding, the station has won 11 Emmys and 8 Communications Excellence to Black Audiences awards.
Achievements and events are not confined to the past. Make sure to etch your own path in the pantheon of human history. This has been Black History Month 365. BAM 365, where you find every day Black history is made.
Rampant overproduction in Oregon's market for legal recreational marijuana has produced a 50% drop in prices, according to State Economics. That widely documented collapse has been tough on farmers and retailers, but a boom for consumers. A new state analysis finds the price collapse sparked a big uptick in marijuana purchases and a corresponding increase in associated tax revenue, the Oregonian and Oregon Live reported. Recreational marijuana sales in Oregon will be nearly $543 million this year, up 29% from 2017 and well above economics expectations forecasts show. When Oregon legalized marijuana 4 years ago, expectations were enormous for the newly legal market. The state created incentives for producers to leave the black market, leading to overproduction and the ensuing price decrease. Recreational marijuana remains a small industry relative to the size of Oregon's economy. For comparison, economists note that cigarette sales are 40% higher than marijuana sales, but legal marijuana is growing fast. State forecasts suggest it will be a billion-dollar market in 2025. While Oregon has no general sales tax, it does levy a 17% sales tax on marijuana. Marijuana taxes generated nearly $70 million in revenue last year and are forecast to generate nearly $90 million in 2018. State forecasters believe marijuana may eventually play a more important role in the state's economy. The Center for Disease Control have warned that you should not eat any romaine lettuce because of concerns of an E. coli outbreak. People should throw out any romaine that they have, and restaurants should not serve it. Although there have been no reported cases of E. coli in Oregon, there have been 10 cases in California and 7 in Michigan. Other states in which it has been reported are Connecticut, Illinois, Massachusetts, Maryland, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, and Wisconsin. As of yet, no source for the outbreak has been identified, but the investigation by federal health officials has begun. A plan to improve transit options and decrease the number of cars in central Portland just received a last-minute addition, one that would include investing in more parking options in the city center. Central City in Motion is an 18 project plan from the Portland Bureau of Transportation that's been a year in the making. CCIM promises pedestrian crossing improvements, redesigned roadways that will better accommodate buses and trucks, and safer biking options in downtown Portland and Central East Side, among other things. The Portland City Council is scheduled to adopt a final CCIM report and implementation plan on Thursday. It will also consider a just-added CCIM parking supply strategy report, one that essentially recommends the city invest in more parking spots, despite CCIM's focus on making the area more bike, public transit, and pedestrian-friendly. Many of those suggested strategies would serve as temporary transitional measures to keep the area's number of parking spaces the same, as the city center is expected to lose an estimated 2% of its parking spaces due to CCIM projects. But three proposals would likely add more permanent parking spaces to the area. And now, it's time for Midheads. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned. At 6, it's Transpositive PDX. Then, at 7, KBOO brings you Calculated Conversations. Tonight's weather will be chilly, with temperatures dipping into the 30s. Tomorrow's weather will be cold and wet, with a high of 49 degrees. Today in history, in 1945, the Nuremberg trials began when 24 of the highest-ranking Nazis went on trial for the atrocities during World War II. Also on this day, in 1946, musician and songwriter Duane Allman, co-founder of the Allman Brothers Band, was born. The quote of the day is from the Queen of Soul herself, Aretha Franklin, and quote, "I always felt rock and roll was very, very wholesome music." And now it's time for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. New Mexico Democratic Congresswoman-elect Deb Haaland is one of two Native American women voters sent to Washington, a historic first. Correspondent Matt Laszlo caught up with her during her first week learning the ropes in the nation's capital.
Elections are tough and intense, but legislating is more difficult. The nation's newly minted lawmakers are now charged with overseeing a more than $1 million budget, while also getting tutored on how to avoid ethics violations and the like. Congresswoman-elect Haaland says it's been a whirlwind, but she's still been able to start forging the relationships that will be key to her success.
Absolutely. Well, it's all about support, right? It's all about joining together, you know, getting your allies together. We have the largest group of women of color in this Congress, and I feel very strongly that we're all going to stick together on so many issues.
The incoming freshman class has been bustling around the Capitol with large binders and briefing materials in tow as they're trained on how to turn their campaign rhetoric into policy. Haaland is hoping to bring attention to the problems plaguing Indian country, especially the plight of the missing Indigenous and Native women, and in that, she's already reaching out to Oklahoma Republican Tom Cole of the Chickasaw Nation.
So I really want to try to reach out and work on issues that we can agree on, and perhaps that'll blossom into other areas that we can also agree on.
Congresswoman-elect Charisse Davids of Kansas is the second Native American woman who was just sent to Washington. We'll be catching up with her after the holiday. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Medford, Massachusetts Mayor Stephanie Burke pulled Native artifacts up for auction after complaints from Native people, the Patch Network reports. The public library had planned to auction Pacific Northwest items it received in the 1800s. An auction house in Boston was set to put the items up for bid December 1st. The North American Indian Center of Boston raised concerns. The mayor pulled the items Monday, saying the city honors and respects the culture and traditions of Native American groups. The Coquille tribe has received a grant to improve health care for its members through technology. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
More than $57,000 from the USDA is going to the tribe to help develop a telemedicine system. Computers, specialized software, and high-definition cameras will connect tribal members, many in remote rural areas, to medical specialists hundreds of miles away. Coquille tribal spokesman Clark Walworth.
It's going to mean less waiting time for patients and reduced travel. Sometimes it can be a real hardship for people to have to drive to Eugene or Roseburg or Portland to see a specialist. So this allows them to do it right away with a specialist wherever. We think it's going to bring better health outcomes.
Approximately 1,300 tribal members are expected to have improved access to medical services, which include pain management, psychiatry, and substance abuse counseling. The telemedicine project is part of a USDA program that's awarded $40 million in grants to rural communities nationwide. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The Cleveland Indians 2019 uniforms were unveiled Monday in Ohio, featuring jerseys without the Chief Wahoo logo. The Indian mascot is now officially retired from the uniforms. The professional baseball team now has red home jerseys and a navy alternate. The official All-Star logo replaces Wahoo on the sleeve. Services are being held in Anchorage, Alaska for Native leader Mary Pete, who fought for subsistence rights. She was also an educator and culture bearer. The 61-year-old passed away over the weekend after battling cancer. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at www.sanofsky.com.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at aarp.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Portland Parks and Recreation will present this year's Native American Marketplace and Family Day from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. November 24th at Mount Scott Community Center, 5530 Southeast 72nd Avenue. This is an opportunity to celebrate Native cultures. During hashtag Native American Heritage Month, with food, crafts, vendors, and free activities for all ages. Activities include Native arts and craft vendors, free roller skating, free swimming, and an Indian taco sale. All proceeds go to support the Delta Park Powwow. For more questions, include vendor inquiries, and please contact Portland Parks and Recreation's Cheryl Juber. Portland State University's Population Research Center released early results for its annual Oregon Population Report Monday morning, and key findings include the state's lowest birth rate in decades, as well as continued population growth from out-of-state transplants. Oregon's population grew by over 50,000 people last year, with 88% of new people coming from out-of-state. It's a slight decrease from 2016, a year that saw more than 60,000 people moving to Oregon. Charles Winterson, a research faculty member at the center, told the Mercury, and quote, that about a quarter of 2017's transplants come from California. And increasingly, Washington is the only state Oregon has a net loss with. That is, more people moved from Oregon to Washington last year than vice versa. The other 12% of new people in Oregon were born here last year, but 2017 saw the lowest birth rate in the state since 1995. Birth rates in Oregon peaked at about 49,000 in 2007 and have been dropping steadily since. A plan to improve transit options and decrease the number of cars in central Portland just received a last-minute addition, one that would include investing in more parking options in the city center. Central City in Motion. The FBI has released its 2017 hate crime statistics, which revealed a 17% increase in incidents since 2016. In 2017, there were 8,493 victims and 6,307 known offenders. By comparison, there were 7,509 victims and 5,727 known offenders in 2016, according to the data. The report contrasts with the prior year when there were 6,036 single bias incidents, or occurrences where the perpetrator has one bias against a community or group. By comparison, in 2017, there were 7,106 single bias incidents reported. According to the FBI, end quote, 58.1% were motivated by a race, ethnicity, ancestry bias. 22% were prompted by religious bias. 15.9% resulted from sexual orientation bias, and 1.7% were motivated by gender identity bias. End quote. This report is shocking and requires Congress's full attention, NAACP President and CEO Derek Johnson said in a statement. End quote. Shouldn't this urgent crisis be the subject of the first post-recess Senate Judiciary Committee hearing today, instead of ramming through more Trump judges? Our lives are at stake, Johnson says. This Sunday, live SET, or Sound Engineering for Teens, students will be doing sound at a free all-ages show at Mississippi Studios Sunday, November 18th. The governor of Easter Island has tearfully begged the British Museum to return one of the most famous statues, saying, and quote, give us a chance so he can come back. The museum has held the Hoa Hakanaya, one of the most spiritually important of the Chilean island stone mantles, for 150 years. End quote. My grandma, who passed away at almost 90 years, she never got the chance to see her ancestors, said Governor Tarita, after meeting officials from the British Museum, accompanied by Felipe Ward, Chile's national assets minister. The 4-ton statue, or Mayo, is one of the hundreds originally founded on the island. Each of the figures was considered to represent tribal leaders or defied ancestors. It was an emotional moment for the indigenous visitors when they saw the bestial statue, which for them contains the spirit of the people. End quote. I believe that my children and their children also deserve the opportunity to touch, see, and learn from him. End quote. We are just a body. You, the British people, have our soul. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, November 20th, 2018. Here are the main points again. City parking changes, Portland population boom slows down, and in international news, Easter Island begs for their famous statue back. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Rachel Hartley, and our engineer is Liam. The director of the Evening News and Public Affairs is Rachel Hartley. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to the KBOO Portland and 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Rachel Hartley. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on Wednesday, Talk Radio. Guest host Heather McCoy talks to former Village Voice editor and journalist Neil DeMoss about Amazon and municipal funding. At 9, on the radio activist poet, publisher and organizer Christopher Luna talks about building community through art. At 10, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, it's The Food Show for people who like to eat. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by the member support. If you'd like to become a member or donate, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. And now it's time for Queer Boom. Tune in and listen in to this Way Out.
Tonight, we can say We fought to keep Oregon a welcoming and inclusive place for all.
We can love and care about people who are different than us. We can embrace difference while seeking common ground.
She spoke out then.
I believe.
She's speaking now.
I believe.
I still believe.
I believe her.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Caribbean Justice Court quashes Guyana's anti-trans law, rainbow candidates surf the U.S. blue wave, and melody and policy ignite Emma's revolution. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Monique Lukens.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news interaffecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending November 17th, 2018. The Caribbean Court of Justice has overturned a law in Guyana that targeted transgender people. The ruling this week declared as unconstitutional the small South American nation's law criminalizing men and women for dressing in clothing of the opposite sex for an improper purpose. The court has jurisdiction over several Caribbean and South American countries. Noting that Guyana's constitution protects its people from discrimination and states that no one is to be treated in a discriminatory manner by any public office or authority, justices struck down that part of the colonial-era British Penal Code that dates back to 1893. The ruling called the law vague, that was from a different time and no longer served any legitimate purpose. The plaintiffs in the case were four transgender women who were arrested in 2009 for cross-dressing in public. The appeal to the Caribbean Court of Justice challenged their conviction by a magistrate who fined them the equivalent of about $100 and ordered them to go to church and give their lives to Jesus Christ. Private consensual adult same-gender sex is against the law and carries a sentence of up to life in prison in Guyana. It's the only country in South America to maintain that part of its antiquated penal code. The first ever LGBTQ pride parade was held in June in Georgetown, the country's capital. The favorable ruling has now sparked equality activists to call on lawmakers in Guyana to repeal all the nation's anti-queer laws.
The Constitutional Chamber of Costa Rica's Supreme Court of Justice struck down the Central American nation's denial of civil marriage to same-gender couples in August, but delayed its ruling from coming into force until after it was officially published. The ruling was a direct result of the decision in January of this year by the Inter-American Court of Human Rights ordering all signatories to the American Convention on Human Rights to open civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples. Rulings by the Inter-American Court are binding on 20 nations in the region. A few have already enacted marriage equality, but most have not. Although President Carlos Alvarado submitted a marriage equality proposal to Costa Rica's Legislative Assembly, its leadership has refused to take up the issue. The country's high court decision was finally published on November 14th. It now gives lawmakers up to 18 months to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. If there's no action by May 2020, the court ruled, same-gender couples will automatically be allowed to start planning their weddings. In their 287-page ruling, justices said that acts of open discrimination, whether they are expressed or implied, cannot be justified in any way in a democratic society that respects fundamental rights. Enrique Sanchez, the country's first openly gay legislator, accuses the Legislative Assembly's leadership of intentionally delaying debate. According to Pink News, evangelical anti-LGBTQ members hold 14 of the chamber's 57 seats.
Tanzania is paying a heavy price for its oppressive treatment of sexual minorities and pregnant schoolgirls. The East African nation's second biggest donor, Denmark, announced that it was withholding the equivalent of about $10 million in aid soon after Dar es Salaam Governor Paul Makonda ordered the arrest of anyone in the region perceived to be homosexual. Tanzania's foreign ministry tried to distance itself from the crackdown, but queer panic quickly spread across the country. The U.S. issued a warning to Americans in the country to be careful what they post on social media, and the European Union withdrew its ambassador. While acknowledging that the loss of financial aid will affect LGBTQ Tanzanians too, Judy Kato, a lawyer with the advocacy group Equality Now, told Reuters that the government has not been receptive to any type of dialogue over the issue of sexual minorities. And now the World Bank has frozen a $300 million education loan to Tanzania over a long-standing policy that bans pregnant girls, the government calls immoral, from attending school, among other human rights concerns. While a law punishing gay sex is rarely enforced in Tanzania, its mere existence fosters anti-queer bias and violence. Pro-equality groups have been shut down, and activists have been arrested. Government authorities have also stopped HIV/AIDS prevention programs for gay men.
Pioneering U.S. activist Harry Hay used to say that queer people are society's trailblazers. A group of about 80 LGBTQ people fleeing persecution is the first from what Donald Trump and his allies have called an invasion to reach the Mexico-U.S. border. They include
Blacksmith by the Carlo Caetano Trio from their 2013 release Impromptu.
That's been traveling through Central America and into Mexico the past few weeks after encountering anti-queer harassment from their fellow asylum seekers. They arrived in the border town of Tijuana this week after gaining support from LGBTQ rights groups to supplement the money they were able to put together for buses to carry them along the last stretch of their journey. The Washington Post reported that they celebrated their arrival by waving rainbow flags and blasting music by Ariana Grande. The queer refugees had enough money between them to rent modest local accommodations in Tijuana while contemplating their next moves. One government official said that the wait for the chance to apply for asylum at nearby San Diego's San Ysidro port of entry is up to 18 months. Sadly, they're already facing anti-queer animus from Tijuana's mayor and some of their neighbors. Cesar Mejia, a 23-year-old Honduran man, told the Spanish news agency EFE that he had to flee his homeland because he had been repeatedly beaten by gang members for being gay. In addition to Honduras, most of the other LGBTQ asylum seekers have fled persecution, poverty, and violence based on their sexual orientation or gender identity in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Nicaragua.
And finally, as we record this newscast amidst the whirlwind that is the Trump administration, a twice-failed Republican candidate in Iowa, who's targeted in an FBI fraud investigation, is still the acting Attorney General of the United States. The president replaced one dyed-in-the-wool homophobe, Jeff Sessions, with another, a former U.S. attorney for Iowa named Matthew Whitaker, the day after the rainbow-hued, blue-wave midterm election swept Democrats into the House majority. As U.S. attorney in 2007, Whitaker brought a politically motivated federal prosecution against Matt McCoy, a rising star in the Democratic Party and Iowa's first openly gay state senator. The case eventually fell apart amid allegations of prosecutorial misconduct, and McCoy was acquitted of extorting a former business partner. But his life in elective politics was over. Judicial appointments and cabinet-level appointments like attorney general require Senate confirmation. Here's Whitaker during a 2014 Conservative Forum as candidate for his state's Republican U.S. Senate nomination, describing what he'd look for in a federal judge.
What I'd like to see is I'd like to see things like their worldview, what informs them, how have they lived their lives, are they people of faith, do they have a biblical view of justice, and if they have a secular worldview where this is all we have here on earth, then I'm going to be very concerned about how they judge.
Are you wondering why the president didn't replace the forced-to-resign Jeff Sessions with a logical next-in-command? Deputy Attorney General Ron Rosenstein, who's overseeing the Mueller investigation? Matthew Whitaker, Jeff Sessions' former chief of staff, has echoed Donald Trump's description of the probe as an unlawful witch hunt.
Whitaker served on the board and often did legal work for a Miami-based company called World Patent Marketing. Time travel, hot tubs, and a toilet for well-endowed men were among its claims to fame. The company allegedly targeted veterans, among other vulnerable people, claiming to help them patent their inventions, which the company failed to do. Whitaker and his associates are under federal investigation for fraud. But he went home to Iowa this week for his first public appearance since Trump named him acting attorney general and displayed amazing chutzpah when he told his audience of legal professionals,
"We're going to keep putting fraudsters in jail. All of us can be on the lookout for fraud schemes and report suspected criminal activity."
A number of lawsuits have already been filed challenging Trump's ability to appoint the legal shill as acting attorney general, whom one legal scholar described as having the least qualifying credentials to be a U.S. attorney, let alone attorney general. The soon-to-be Democratic House majority, which officially doesn't take power until early January, is already planning to haul Whitaker before a number of congressional committees to respond to numerous charges that he's unqualified, a stooge for Donald Trump, and, as the Constitution requires, he's never been vetted in or confirmed by the Senate to hold the post of Attorney General. This is all assuming, of course, that Whitaker is still the acting Attorney General of the United States next week, next month, or next year.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending November 17th, 2018. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at the always updating thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Anique Lukens.
Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom.
No peace without justice or music. Steve Sims focuses on a revolution in song later in the program.
Be true to you. Be proud. Be strong. 'Cause love's never
Barbara Streisand. Tuesday is a critical election for LGBTQ people and all marginalized communities. And I'm working with GLAAD to help ensure the largest turnout ever of LGBTQ and ally voters in a midterm election. I hope you will join me at the polls to send a strong message that America is better when we stand together.
Election day in the U.S. has turned into election month as delayed results, recounts, and runoffs continue, still trying to determine the winners of the remaining too-close-to-call midterm contests. The number of tight races is one proof that the passionate get-out-the-vote campaigns featuring stars like Barbara Streisand really worked. Record-breaking turnout fulfilled the Democratic Party's dream of a blue wave across the country, and LGBTQ voters, over 80% of them, help sweep Democratic candidates into office. A record number of LGBTQ candidates rode the blue wave to victory. We heard from several of them last week. Add to them the re-elected bisexual Oregon Governor Kate Brown.
This election shows that when our values are on the ballot, Oregonians will come together and fight like hell to stand up for what we believe in. Tonight, we can say we fought to keep Oregon a welcoming and inclusive place for all. We fought to make sure that every woman in this state, regardless of their income, regardless of their zip code, and regardless of their immigration status, will have access to the full complement of reproductive health services. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Several queer candidates achieved notable firsts. Jennifer Webb is the first out lesbian elected to the Florida legislature. Josh Tenorio becomes Guam's lieutenant governor, the U.S. territory's first out gay executive. Tenorio ran with Lou Leon Guerrero, who becomes the island's first woman governor. 27-year-old Malcolm Kenyatta was elected Pennsylvania's second openly gay member of the state house. He's also the first black gay man elected to statewide office and joins re-elected gay incumbent Brian Sims. Megan Hunt is the first openly LGBTQ person ever elected to the Nebraska state legislature. Former Marine Neil Rafferty beat his Republican opponent by almost 9-1 to be the first openly gay man elected to the Alabama state legislature.
I'm running for this seat because I will never forget how it feels to be excluded and how hard we had to work to get a seat at the table. I'm running for this seat to fight for your family the same way that I fought for mine.
Do you remember the viral video of the 19-year-old who argued for his lesbian mom's right to marry before the Iowa legislature? Zach Walls is now going back there as a newly elected Democratic state senator who beat his libertarian opponent by more than 50 points. Walls was among hundreds of young candidates motivated to run for public office in the wake of the 2016 presidential election. An all-blue delegation will even be going to the U.S. House from California's infamous Orange County, the deep red home of many anti-queer, anti-minority politicians and ballot initiatives. In the usually conservative northern part of Los Angeles County, blue bisexual Katie Hill unseated entrenched far-right GOP congressional homophobe Steve Knight. Another one of those long, narrow vote counts has finally resulted in Arizona declaring Kristen Sinema its new U.S. Senator, the first out bisexual in the U.S. Senate.
Arizona rejected what has become far too common in our country: name-calling, petty personal attacks, and doing and saying whatever it takes just to get elected. It's dangerous, and it lessens who we are as a country. But we can work with people who are different than us. We can be friends with people who are different than us. We can love and care about people who are different than us. We can keep people who are different than us safe. We can be good people who care deeply about each other, even when we disagree. We can try to understand another person's life experiences and perspective. We can try to imagine what another person's life might be like, that perhaps her experiences have shaped her life, just like our experiences have shaped ours. We can embrace difference while seeking common ground. Pledge.
More than 150 LGBTQ Victory Fund candidates won office from sea to shining sea, more than in any previous election, and the first keep rolling in. Gabriel Acevedo, the first gay Afro-Latino in the Maryland General Assembly, Sonia Yaquez Lewis, the first queer Latina in the Colorado State Legislature, Brandon Woodard and Susan Ruiz, the first out members of the Kansas House of Representatives, California State Insurance Commissioner-elect Ricardo Lara, and North Carolina Appeals Court Judge-elect John Arrowwood, the first out gay men to win statewide election in their states, And Florida has its first all-LGBTQ city commission, thanks to the voters of Wilton Manors. Some Republican losses were equally telling. Ron Simmons was routed in his re-election bid after sponsoring an anti-trans bathroom bill in the Texas legislature. Gays for Trump leader Peter Boykin was also trounced in his bid for a seat in the North Carolina legislature. Even more telling than her re-election defeat is what Kim Davis intends to do next. The Rowan County, Kentucky clerk who gained fame by denying gay and lesbian couples marriage licenses plans to become an evangelical minister.
It's a little bit sad.
All in all, one of our favorite U.S. midterm winners is Kansas Congressperson-elect Charisse Davids. She's one of HBO's real-time comedian Bill Maher's favorites, too.
Two Native Americans. Deb Hyland from New Mexico, and my favorite, Kansas. Kansas. Charisse Davids, a lesbian mixed martial arts fighter. Let's see Trump call her Pocahontas.
Straight military personnel will have to shower with homosexual.
What do you think goes wrong when people shower with homosexuals? Do you think it's the spray makes it catching? I mean, we don't get ourselves dry cleaned.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
A few U.S. midterm election results are still coming in at a trickle, but the flood of activism is still rising, which means that the work of a lesbian political music duo powerhouse is far from over. This Way Out Music Focus host Steve Sims casts his vote for Emma's Revolution.
Oh, oh, oh.
Music is a way for individuals to express personal as well as political subjects, and songs by the duo Emma's Revolution are well known for just that reason. That's the song If I Had a Hammer, written by Pete Seeger and Lee Hayes in 1949 in support of the progressive movement. It was a number 10 hit for Peter, Paul, and Mary in 1962, and went on to number 3 a year later when recorded by Trini Lopez. Here it is being performed by Emma's Revolution, the award-winning activist duo of Pat Humphreys and Sandy Oh, whose songs have been sung for the Dalai Lama, praised by Pete Seeger, and covered by Holly Near. This is Pat Humphreys' song Swimming to the Other Side. Author Eileen E. Freeman calls it one of the 10 most awesome and most singable songs ever written. She says don't listen to it unless you're prepared to rethink how you live, love, and laugh. It is also the song that helped connect the Emma's Revolution duo.
I believe if I lived my life again, I'd still be.
This is Emma's Revolution, singing Hymn Song, off the Grammy-nominated album Singing Through the Hard Times, a tribute to Utah Phillips. Their music has been featured on NPR's All Things Considered and Pacifica's Democracy Now!
You know, I think if death really held a knife,
This song is Sing, People Sing. It's a song written in tribute to their friend and mentor, Pete Seeger. And it features Pat on banjo and Gary Johnson on accordion. Pat was with the Seeger family and a small group of friends when Pete passed. The duo wrote Sing, People Sing in the days following. It was moving listening to Pat talk about that time.
When I got there, people came from everywhere. Climbed a redwood by the stage to watch the reveille. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom.
This song is Peace, Salam, Shalom, written following September 11th, 2001, and sang at an impromptu peace march in D.C. that week. Of the song, the duo says, when the only response from the government and corporate media was war and retribution, we wrote Peace, Salam, Shalom. Another song, written following 9/11, was about undocumented workers killed in the World Trade Center. This is If I Give Your Name.
Sleepless nights,
Emma's Revolution's latest song is I Believe Her. A week before the Brett Kavanaugh, Dr. Ford hearing, Sandy Oh says, Pat and I got an email asking us to sing at an upcoming demonstration in San Francisco in support of Dr. Ford. I got the idea for the song that morning, and we finished I Believe Her by the end of breakfast. We recorded it the next night, shot the video 2 days later, and released it the day of the hearing. We and so many others have experienced some level of sexual abuse and/or harassment. It's a very personal as well as a political subject for us, explains O. And Humphreys adds, we needed a way to combat our own feelings of rage and helplessness at the prospect of Brett Kavanaugh being confirmed to a lifetime appointment on the Supreme Court.
We did not forget, I believe her. She spoke out then,
I believe.
She's speaking now,
I believe.
I still believe,
I believe her.
Humphreys praised their collaborators, a group of East Bay women, artists, and sound engineers on both coasts. Humphreys says everybody set aside their other projects to create this recording and video as quickly as possible, so we could give voice to the millions who say, I believe her. Among the collaborators was Vicki Randall of the Mavis Staples Band, and formerly of the Tonight Show Band, who adds cajon and a soaring vocal solo, as well as Irene Young, renowned music photographer and videographer, who filmed, edited, and directed the video. You can learn more about Emma's Revolution at emmasrevolution.com. For This Way Out, I'm Steve Sims.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Wenzel Jones and Monique Lukens, produced with Brian DeShazer, and from Steve Sims. Barbara Streisand, Taylor Mack, and Emma's Revolution performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the Estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors who make this program possible. Be sure to visit thiswayout.org before you make your Giving Tuesday commitments on November 27th. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media and wherever you get your podcasts. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 7RGY Jeeveston, Tasmania, KWTF.net Bodega Bay, California, WESU Middletown, Connecticut, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.
Central America and in
That was Blacksmith by the Carlo Caetano Trio from their 2013 release, Impromptu. I'm Jay, and we're hammering out another edition of Deep Threes. Sampler artist Bob Ostertag first played the Buchla 200 synthesizer as a 19-year-old music student in 1976. He came back to the updated 200E analog synthesizer in 2011, still complete with patchcord connections, for his Motormouth project. Here's the title track, recorded in one take.
Thank you. proud to co-sponsor Top Dog Underdog, running Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays through December 1st at the Chapel Theater in Milwaukee. Top Dog Underdog tells the story of sibling rivalry between African-American brothers and a turbulent relationship punctuated with dark humor. Their names are Lincoln and Booth. The show has adult content and is not recommended for children. Again, that's Top Dog Underdog, running Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays through December 1st at the Chapel Theater, 4107 Southeast Harrison Street in Milwaukee. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.